The Conversation Hour with John Fain on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
I'm John Fain, and my co-host today is a comedian, screenwriter, director and author, occasional broadcaster when anybody lets him as well. Tony Martin, welcome back to The Conversation.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here. And can I just mention something that happened last time I was here? The Wiggles were here. Do you remember that?
You were the co-host when we had two or three Wiggles in the studio.
I think it was just two. Subbing them out. And they were just sitting out there, and I was standing next to them talking. Your producer came in just before the show and said, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on the show. Can I just ask, you're not planning to say the word, and then she's used the F word, on today's show, are you?
The F word.
Yeah, and she said it, and I've said, no, I wasn't planning to use it. And she said, well, there was someone on the show recently who insisted on using it, and of course I'm thinking, who would that have been? Was Judith Durham who was on the show swearing? And then she's gone, and another thing, can I ask, you're not planning to talk about, and then she's mentioned a fairly graphic sexual practice, which, technically illegal, is certainly frowned upon in certain cultures. And I said, no, actually I wasn't planning on mentioning that.
And she ticked the boxes.
And she said, because we did have someone who insisted on talking about that. I'm thinking, did Pete Smith come on here and lower the tone? My mind was racing. And all the time the Wiggles are just sitting there, and I'm looking down going, I hope you guys are writing this down. And it was just something, I don't know, there was something wronger about saying it in front of the Wiggles than saying it on the ABC.
They're kind of high priests, aren't they?
So have you been having a lot of bad language on your show recently?
Well, the Wiggles they're like shamans or, gurus or something. They occupy a special sanctified place in the pantheon of Australian showbiz. There's little doubt about it. Yes, we've had our share of disgraceful behaviour, and there's not much you can do about it live to air if a guest decides to be disgraceful. But let's make sure we have a clean slate today.
It's clean today. I'm not going to lower the tone.
Hey, I thought about you the other day.
Oh, goodness.
There was an announcement from your former employers that they were axing yet another combination of breakfast radio hosts.
Yes.
And poor old Miff Warhurst and Peter Hellyer have been told that their time is up as the ratings have been slipping, and they're going to yet again reinvent the radio station which axed you.
Yeah, well, the biggest mystery in radio that you hear is how do Guy Dobson and Rex Morris hang on to their jobs after after driving Triple M in Melbourne and Sydney to literally its lowest ratings in the history of the network.
Keep blaming the talent and leave the managers out of it.
And you go, well, the part of it is that, well, Guy Dobson is on the board of Oz Stereo. So
that helps.
He can never be sacked. But I love how his latest press release, he said, we've got rid of them because we need something different. Different is what we need on this station, which was apparently the reason that we were sacked.
Because you were different.
And he's gone, and we need something different. So we're going to have Eddie McGuire talking about football.
Oh, that's good.
And you go, that's new.
That's
and I love
fresh.
How in Sydney, the rumour is they're getting Matty Johns.
Who is?
To the Matthew Johns.
The disgraced Matthew Johns.
And you're going, your reputation must be really good when in order to improve it, you have to have somebody accused of sexual assault hosting your breakfast program. Things must be. But I do feel very sorry for Pete and Miff because when we got the arse, Triple M put out a completely bogus press release claiming that the reason that we were sacked was to divert money and resources to the Pete and Miff show. It was suggested that millions of dollars that would have been paid to us was going to be paid to Peter Hellyer.
Well, you're all on millions, aren't you, in commercial radio? Aren't you all on millions?
Well, I can tell you our show was made for a cost of $500,000 a year. That was covering four people's wages and all the guests who came on the program. So it wasn't an insanely expensive program. That was for the first year when we did it for an hour. Then for the second year it became 2 hours and they didn't want to pay us anymore. So we did literally the second half of our show for free, which I don't think has that ever happened in the history of commercial radio, where someone's doing half their show for free. And then we had a sponsorship deal which was for $800,000. So the sponsorship deal was covering the cost of the show, and then there was quite a lot of profit on top of that. So if we were to leave,
so you were drawing $800,000 in sponsorship, and they were spending only $500,000 of that on the show.
On the show,
so $300,000 was straight profit to the radio station.
That's right. So, but the point is, if we are to leave,
no wonder he's the managing director. See, that's why he's still there.
But if we are to leave, it's not as if that sponsorship money would immediately be paid to Peter Hellyer. That money just disappears because it was to sponsor our show. So it was quite unfair on Pete and Miff to suggest that our show was being axed in order to pay for their show.
I don't think they didn't suggest it. No, Triple M suggested it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Triple M suggested that.
Not Pete Miff suggesting that. But, look, you know, there's a long and well-credentialed roll call of people with excellent reputations in showbiz who have found their time curtailed on commercial radio.
That's true. It's a very big march on Anzac Day for ex-people from Oz Stereo.
Survivors of the great massacres of Oz Stereo.
That's right.
Let's not just pick on Oz Stereo, because there are some other operators in the commercial radio field who are doing rather poorly at the moment too. And what endlessly amuses me is, you know, as someone who has been banging away and, you know, at various times, the ABC has been the whipping boy and patronised and looked down on and made fun of by the commercial radio industry. And the queue of people who come and say, I haven't got any work, have you, now at the ABC? And it, pretty much the entire industry turn around, look at ABC radio and television at the moment and say, well, it's not a bad place to be. Have you got any work going over there?
It's quite a recovery clinic from people who have been in commercial radio.
It's a wonderful talent pool to be able to draw from. It's just fantastic. Yeah. And indeed, some of those people are coming into play today.
Ooh.
Now, tell me, what else do you do now in your, well, it's not dotage exactly, is it?
Well, I've been doing quite a lot of things. I've written a book, which is coming out in October, called A Nest of Occasionals, rather confusingly, but all will be explained. And I've decided to start a website, which, and before anyone panics at the ABC, it's completely non-profit. Nobody's being paid to write for it, and there's no paid ads on it. And it's called The Scrivener's Fancy. It's rather snootily devoted to the written word. Our subheading is Lowbrow Commentary in Elegant Surrounds. You can find it at thescrivenersfancy.com. And it's a series of weekly columns on various subjects. And we have people like Sean McAuliffe and Bob Franklin and Gary McCaffrey, a lot of fine comic writers contributing columns and material and ideas. I know a lot of people listening to this show would have been fans of Bud Tingwell. If you want to hear some great stories or read some great stories about Bud Tingwell, go to the site and find something called Bud in Brackets, which has proved to be quite a popular piece.
So is this a recreation for you?
Yeah,
you're saying
it's
there's no sponsorship, there's no money involved, people are donating their pieces.
It's literally a hobby. I'm just spending my weekend writing. I spent this weekend writing a fictional piece about Batman being cast as the lead in Run for Your Wife. That's right. It's called The Dark Knight Triumphant in Classic Cooney Farce. That's gone up on the website today.
Wonderful.
You're looking at me like I'm making a lot of this up. It's all true.
I'm wondering how you're making a living.
Well, I've been doing... I'll tell you what I have been doing. I've been working on a new show for SBS about history, which is something I know absolutely nothing about, so I've decided...
Good credentials.
That'd be funny to get Tony Martin in and make him look like an idiot, which I'll be doing from August, a new show called ADBC, hosted by Sam Pang, who people might know from the Triple R breakfast program.
Excellent. And so you're writing for that?
No, I'm appearing on it.
Okay.
Myself, they've sort of got historians, people who know a lot about history, and some pretty funny historians, I have to say.
Yep.
And then they've got a bunch of comedians, me and people like Michelle Laurie, Judith Lucy, Nellie Thomas, George McEncrow, Celia Pacola, and... yeah, it's going to be a show that makes fun of history. There you go. Write in and complain now.
On the contrary, Sam Pang will be a guest on The Conversation Hour next Monday.
He's great.
So that's going to be good. But tell me, is it about Australian or world or what
it's
sort of
about,
history?
It's every kind of history imaginable. And it's sort of like it's in the form of a quiz program, but it's sort of educational and comedic at the same time, because history is just full of so many hilarious facts that you just, it's a good way to get to jokes.
And there's nothing wrong with making history accessible. In fact, quite the opposite. The more accessible you can make it, the more fun you can make it, the more we learn, because the people's ignorance about what's gone on in the world around us condemns us to make the same mistakes.
History is full of hilarious things. Yeah. I didn't know there was an Ottoman Air Force until yesterday.
That makes sense. If I could go back and start my studies again... I think I'd only study history.
You need someone interesting to teach it to you. I mean, history was tedious at school. We just had terrible history teachers.
Oh, no, not at school. At university, though, you found a few people who could, especially after lunch.
Right.
Found that most lectures, in fact, were much better in the arts faculty, essentially, of course, where I was, as well as the law school. After lunch, when the lecturers had been to the staff club, I found after lunch lectures definitely better than morning lectures.
Right. Well, it is, I mean, I'm like, like you. I'm going, I wish I could go back to school and have really interesting teachers, and I'd be a lot smarter now. I'm blaming the teachers. That's what I'm doing.
I mean, I don't mind reading a good novel, one that completely absorbs you, but I find I'm reading more and more history, travel, biographies, those sorts of things, and finding them much more enjoyable. And unless it's a really good novel, I'm finding I'm struggling to stay with some of the offerings.
I've been sitting out in your foyer this morning reading Being Hal Ashby, which is the first ever biography of Hal Ashby, the director of Harold and Maude, and Being There.
And what are you learning from him?
I'm learning that apparently the way to make a really good film is to smoke an enormous amount of marijuana.
Okay, I'm so glad I asked.
Sorry, but it's true.
Tony Martin, and that website once more is...
The Scrivener's Fancy.
So put that into your Gurgle or your favourite search engine.
Yeah, yeah.
And The Scrivener's Fancy will take you to Tony Martin's hobby.
Yes.
Where you'll find fine writing.
My column is called Scarcely Relevant.
Scarcely Relevant. Tony Martin, amongst others there. Our guests, the actor, TV host, raconteur and all-round good guy Shane Bourne. But first up, in just a moment. You've seen her on the telly, you've heard her on the radio, you may even have read some of her writings. But is she going through some sort of existential crisis? We'll find out when Gretel Killeen joins us as our first guest on the Conversation Hour.
774 ABC Melbourne.
Who are you?
Gretel Killeen.
What are you doing here?
I'm just popped in to say hello to you lovely boys.
Excellent. Well, it's just as well. I don't have to say another word then. Keep going.
Sorry. You're absolutely right. I'm not here yet. Go.
Well, I remember, hey, you've been on the ABC, Gretel Killeen. I'm going to go right back into the past. Here's where I first ever saw you, was on the ABC version of the Mike Walsh Show.
Oh, thank you.
And it was you, Jonathan Biggins, and Phil Scott were the sort of...
Jeff Kelso.
Oh, Jeff Kelso.
Yes.
Were the in-house comedy troupe.
Yes, in inverted commas.
Right.
Yeah, we were. And we had to come up with 3 minutes of comedy each week.
And how was Mike? That was kind of the last time we saw. That was his last go, wasn't it?
Well, he's terrific. I love these, you know, people who have a really long innings in the industry. He was absolutely fantastic. People were mesmerised by his hair because in those days, remember, you used to spray the colour on to it look like you had more hair than you really had.
Oh, what do you mean in those days?
Oh, sorry, yours is working well too.
Tony's is looking great.
Well, no, that's funny you mention that because when we did The Late Show, I remember we did the very last episode of The Late Show and it was live to air, so it was really sad. And Don Lane had sung a song and we all were sitting in the dressing room and taking our makeup off and no one could think of anything to say and people were crying. And then a woman came in, a production assistant came in and said in a really loud voice, "Has anyone seen Don's hair in a can?"
That is exactly what it was called.
And that's
hair in a can.
That's
you're
I always
so
remember.
Right.
That was the final words of that show.
So we were up against that, of course, as a comedy sketch. You know, we were really upstaged by the hair in a can.
And I mentioned that show to Sean McAuliffe. I was saying, I'm doing this thing with Gretel Killeen. I'm sure she was on the... Yes, I am. How many can I get in? And then he said that he did a pilot with you at about that time.
Yes.
You're looking at me like I shouldn't mention this?
You shouldn't mention any of it, quite frankly.
But what was that? Was it you and Sean McAuliffe?
No, I think there were a group of us.
There's a reason why it was just a pilot.
I think we all have pilots.
Well, Sean said to me...
Littered through our lives.
He said it was rejected in favour of the comedy sale.
Yeah, so it was pretty bloody good.
Oh,
you can imagine.
There was good people in the comedy. Robin Butler started in the comedy.
That's exactly right. So thank you for bringing up all the true successes of my past.
No. In fact, you've touched on the theme of Gretel's new book, which is that life's a process of constant distillation. And some things filter through and some things don't. Is that a fair depiction of it, Gretel?
Well, it's much more intellectual than I would have said, but yes, I say, well
it's
done.
It's the ABC.
No, thank you for observing that, because, you know, it's exaggerated throughout, but it is a process of... The book is about what is the purpose in life and where am I going. And
have you got a crisis underway?
Look, I've had a crisis all my life. Hasn't every performer and writer?
Of us disguise it better than others.
Well, I decided to be out and proud. I think there's a benchmark of perfection that makes other people feel really insignificant and as though they're living incomplete lives. And I thought, nah, be honest, communicate with people properly. Mind you, having done that, it's the characters are not real, the scenarios are not real, but the heart, there's a heartfelt truth.
You're going to have
what
to.
What is the point?
I think you have to explain this more, because it seems like an unusual idea for a book. Because the first impression I had when I looked at it was, oh, this is a true story. This is just a straightforward memoir.
Yeah.
But it's not, is it?
No, it's not, because you could see by the look in my face when you were talking about incidents in my past that actually I've been hit on the head too many times that I don't remember anything from my past.
So you've fictionalized your own life?
I've fictionalized my own life. So the character is called Gretel, which is a spooky coincidence, right. But she has two children, as I do, and she has worked in television. But the incidents, I can't really remember, for example, what happened in Big Brother.
Right.
A lot of that is like the pain of childbirth. You know, I love doing Big Brother, but... And also, I don't want to get sued by other people.
Right.
So
yes.
I don't remember.
And your nose isn't that badly damaged either, referring to one of the stories in the book.
Well, that is a mildly true story, going on a date with a man.
No. Do tell it.
Well, because I talk about being single and being a mum and everything, female, being daughter, all of these things, which is great because a lot of people relate to it. But it was just one particular date, and this man worked in cosmetic surgery.
Oh.
And he just said to me... partway through the night, he just seemed to be looking at me mesmerised, as though I was somewhat beautiful.
As are we, of
course. Yes, you too are, although come back into the room. So anyway, he was there, looked at my face and he said, so tell me, what happened to your nose? And I thought he meant, how did I have such a magnificent looking nose? Why was I so beautiful? And I said, oh, nothing. Thinking, did he think I'd had an operation on it? And then he said, are you sure you're not a coke addict or you haven't had it broken in a sporting incident?
Really?
Yeah.
Was this first date?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He's got style, this boy.
Yeah. Was it the last? Let me think. So, but that is one of the things also when you're in the public eye. I don't know if you've ever found that with the television and radio work you guys do. But people don't necessarily think of you as a real person.
No,
so they'll say things to you that as though you are... skin of steel and none of it is actually going to affect you.
I get people addressing me as though I'm Barjas, apparently. People constantly yell Barjas at me. And if you're with someone who doesn't know what Barjas is, it's a very hard thing to explain.
But isn't that part of the territory? You put yourself out there, especially with the show you did with Big Brother. Right out there.
Yeah, but that to me is the interesting thing, because you put a version of yourself out there. It's not really you, with all of your complexities and your insecurities and your questions. And that's why, even though this book is exaggerated, it's actually the truth. I wanted to talk about the human side. I think if you're going to be judged, you want to be judged for who you are rather than a character that you're sometimes playing. In fact, I was listening to the radio when I was in Queensland, and you said one of the most horrible things on radio that I've ever heard about myself.
About you?
Yes.
Really?
And
yes.
It was?
He said something like, and I was really disappointed because I've always been a fan of yours.
Look, I do admit that we used to claim that you were being dressed by your children.
Oh, no,
remember
I didn't
that.
Care about that. That didn't matter.
Hang on, Gretel.
Because I was.
You can get your revenge.
Well,
certainly.
No, see, revenge is not my thing. In fact, I think the best thing is if I don't continue, because he's clearly sitting there uncomfortable.
Yeah, string it out.
No,
well,
please.
See, I've always loved listening to you on radio.
Right.
Past tense. No, I've always loved
Well, no, it's
to
a very...
You.
With Big Brother, it's very unusual, because when you work in commercial radio, it's pretty much... I don't know whether you would know this, but it's virtually compulsory to rave and rave about Big Brother.
Yeah.
You're told never to slag it off because the network is sponsoring. breakfast shows are told whenever someone comes out of the Big Brother house, you've got to have them on the show and the evictees, and you've got to... Saying a bad thing about Big Brother in commercial radio is almost a sacking offence. But whereas, and nothing against you personally, but the show itself is hated by an enormous number of people. And our attitude was, well, those people's voice is not being represented on commercial
radio.
Well,
what you said, because I was driving into work on that day on the Gold Coast and I was listening to you on the radio.
Hang on, drum roll.
Yeah, enjoying it. And you said, someone said to you, oh, it's a great day. You're looking out the window. It's a great day. And you said something like, it'll be a great day if Gretel Colleen falls off the top of a building.
Me?
Yes. I was listening to that and I thought...
I don't think I would have said something
like
that blunt.
It doesn't sound funny. No. Well,
really?
The person you were with laughed. And I thought...
It'd be a great day if Gretel Colleen fell off a building. I really don't imagine that I would have said that.
Well,
forgive me if
it's not exactly those words. But anyway, it's interesting because, as you say, you know, we've come across each other over the years, and you do become a character. You know, like, you're not really a person. I completely understand that, yes, I am fodder for that.
Well, but let me say that every single episode of Get This has been archived on the internet. So if I did say that, there will be people right now going, yes, there it is, 3rd of March 2007, in the second break.
Look, they probably will, and they'll let us know. So,
the text messaging service, 1977477.
I'm quite shocked to hear that. I really can't imagine that I would have put it quite that bluntly and horribly.
I think you possibly put it better than that, but I can still feel the pain. Yeah. But it's nice to see you here.
Well, I'm sorry if I said that, because I really can't.
Don't be.
I did a million jokes about Big Brother.
Exactly.
I do admit that.
And so you should. That was your job.
But I just...
And that's what Big Brother was about. Mm. I mean, you didn't really care as long as we were talking about you, surely.
Oh, look, talking about me, I don't really care at all. It absolutely was a gig. And it was a great one. I'm really glad that I did it. But I do feel that I couldn't quite express for those 7 years who I am. Like, it's similarly, I couldn't ring you up, for example, on air and go, what the hell are you talking
about? Well, on our show, you could.
People. No, but I personally couldn't, because I was there representing something bigger than myself. And that was also my job. I was
representing
people.
That's what you were being paid for.
People. Well, but morally also, I don't believe that you betray the people that you're working with. It wasn't so much about me. So I copped a lot of that, and you do have a thick one does develop a thick skin, but it's interesting because it does change your perspective somewhat in terms of throwing slings and arrows at other people, because I think there comes a point where you either break or you don't care about it. And there have been some times in the past where I've thought, this is too much.
It's
not your
like,
comment.
It's,
but
it's a bit like being an actor with a plum role, which you then are identified with forever afterwards.
Yes.
And you can't ever appear in another show without people thinking about how you were in what you're identified for.
But that's why it's really good. You know, I've always been a writer, and it's great to do that, because that's where the truth comes from.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
So how good are you at being Gretel Colleen, is what it boils down to.
I was really bad at being Gretel Colleen the celebrity. Really, really bad at it. Like a lot of comics or performers, I'm actually quite a shy person. Yeah. So to be out there in that role, and it was just part of a progression in my career. I have never been someone who thought, I want to be on television, I want to be in the spotlight.
I want to host the Logies.
Like those things just came into my life. And so I thought, okay, well, and I'm raising two kids and I have to financially support them. Okay, I'll do the gig. I didn't think in my life I'd ever be criticised for, was I too fat, was I too thin? Because
right.
I was always more a brain person. So I thought, well, actually, I'm not meant to be one of those people. I'm not meant to be a celebrity. I'm not 23. I don't have blonde hair or whatever it was. So it was interesting to be judged for what I'd never perceived myself to be.
But don't you find as you get older that it becomes actually quite good material for writing and talking about on the radio?
Yeah.
When you're younger, you're much more vain and you're worried about what are people saying about me? Am I cool? Am I the new Will Anderson? Am I sort of popular? And then as you sort of get into your 40s and you head slowly and inexorably towards Larry David country, that sort of vanity falls away, and insults and terrible reviews just become hilarious, I find. It's all material.
That is so true. And I could feel the moment, because someone was interviewing me and mentioned the Logies recently. And, of course, because I'm on a book tour Bum Dropped, I'm wondering, people must ask me about the Logies. They feel compelled to. But I'd reached a point of personal evolution on the issue where I could feel exactly as you're saying, that it was kind of hilarious in retrospect. Enormous response. No, never. I never have ever watched myself in thousands of shows of Big Brother, even the Mike Walsh. I don't watch. I move forward and go on. But it's a really nice place when you can actually look at yourself almost with fondness, which is difficult for a performer to do because there's so much self-loathing and low self-esteem
it's good. I was talking about this with someone the other day. It's good to have other people around you when that happens. Like when you're in a sketch comedy group and you do a gig and it dies in the arse.
Yep.
Sorry to say the word arse.
Again.
Wiggles aren't here. When that happens, you go down to the pub afterwards and it's hilarious. Everyone laughs about, oh, you were worse and what about that bit. But when you're doing stand-up on your own and it dies and you're in the hotel room on your own, it's the most depressing experience in the world.
Avoid it at all costs.
So as long as you're in a group of people when something terrible happens,
so
it can be quite funny.
So do you think I should get more friends?
that's not for me to say, but as long as... Yeah, you need other people around you for when things go horribly wrong.
It's absolutely right. And you know what else? You need someone or to teach yourself to put it in perspective. with the Logies. You know, well, I was on stage, what, 5.5 minutes out of a nearly 3-hour show?
God.
Let's put that in perspective. Was I, if I was really shithouse, okay. I was really, excuse my language, I was, was I crap? What do you say?
Well,
ass. So if I was really that bad, okay. But I didn't kill someone.
No,
you know,
but it's a very, isn't it almost an impossible gig to win, really? Because I don't know about the Logies, but I've seen people, I've been to the Arias a few times, and it's the sort of coolest audience, and they don't want to laugh. You know, industry people are sort of judging immediately. It's hard to to win that room
almost
over.
Almost impossible. Gretel, I've got some really sad news for you. We don't have a Medibank provider number. But the counselling will continue, and we're calling in one of the very, very best. Shane Bourne will be joining us in just a moment. Legendary comedian, actor, TV host, raconteur and therapist as our next guest with Tony Martin and Gretel Killeen on The Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Tony Martin, my co-host on The Conversation Hour today. And between Tony Martin, Gretel Killeen and Shane Bourne, I'm sure, Gretel, we can attend to whatever residual problems and issues you still have.
I think I'm going to need therapy after you suggesting I need therapy. I've completed the book.
Yes.
I've analysed my life, everybody else's. I've found humour in it. I've moved on.
There you are.
Yeah.
And what about your bum? Is that
my bum
in the
has
same
moved
situation?
Down.
Have you spoken to Andy Griffiths? Because his bum went psycho.
His bum went psycho. He wrote a children's book quite a few years ago, didn't he? No, mine is obviously the metaphor for the drooping bum, which is wisdom and experience. That's what it signifies.
It's the women's equivalent of when your balls drop when you're a boy.
Well,
when
you
your
see,
bum drop when
you're a boy. Men are so arrogant because their bums drop too. In
they
a
do.
Much more pathetic sad way.
Why is it more pathetic and
well,
sad?
Well, everything about you drips from the waist down, doesn't it?
Not all the time.
I don't know
it
about
depends.
Your personal life there. They do.
It depends what's going on.
Well, you can do butt clenching exercises to fix up the back view, but you can't. Can you do anything for the front view?
That if you get on the net, the emails you get day in, day out.
What, a hairnet?
No, the internet.
Oh.
Look at that, cracking
Sorry,
puns.
Are you getting emails about how to clench your buttocks?
No, I'm talking about the frontal area.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. How do they start? You can't stop them. Have you got a filter for those at your website, at your email,
no, bring
whatever?
Bring them on.
But you're not
all.
Meant to open them.
You're not meant to open them. That's
yes.
a good point.
Yeah. Because if you don't open them, they feel rejected and they stop sending them to you.
Shane, is this what it's like when you do the writing for Thank God You're Here? Are these the sorts of scenarios you're workshopping?
Fortunately, I'm not involved in the workshopping. That is left up to the wise, and what was the other word?
The bum dropped.
Yeah, but when the bum dropped, it was wisdom.
Yeah,
and
you see, I can't remember because my bum's dropped. I can't remember.
The skill and the talent of working dog. Mm. And they get great joy out of that, coming up with the scenarios and matching the scenarios with the performers. And
I've always given you credit for coming up with all the ideas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's got the glory
same,
job.
In the same way with Gretel and Big Brother. See?
Yeah, I think, put it this way, I inspire them.
Yeah.
What, in your absence?
Yeah.
Do you see them? Do you?
What
do you...
would Shane come up with? And they go with the opposite. Because they.
But when you're on the night, is that the first time you're seeing them? Or do you sneak in the afternoon and see the rehearsal?
No, I used to. No, that's the first time. Mm-hmm. Early days, I was down at the office, you know, 2 or 3 days, hanging around, making cups of tea for people.
Looking for something to do.
And then I thought, this isn't working for me. Better to do it on the hop. I mean, you know, there's not much to do. It's hello, what have you been doing? There's the door. Good luck. Come out. Well done, Tom. Good night.
You're obviously not under contract negotiations at the moment because you've really undersold your skill and participation there.
Look, it's I find it a joy, and I don't want to interfere with that by turning it into a task that requires preparation.
Do you is it
or work.
Is it hard to resist when you're doing City Homicide and there's a door in a scene? Is it hard to resist saying your world awaits as a detective?
Yep. Yeah, see you on the other side.
Yeah.
It is, or even, you know, when we turn up for the crime scene. I'm waiting for one of the dead bodies to say, thank God you're here, I think I've been murdered.
You're waiting to look over to Tom Gleisner to see his thoughts on
Tom,
the murder.
Yeah.
But do you find also that now whenever you're near a door socially, someone will do
man.
The...
If I don't need to be near a door. Oh, I can be anywhere, and quite often that reference... Yeah. Will occur because it's an easy one, thank God you're here, but it's got a positive kind of undertone, which is much better than the old hey-hey days when we used to do the joke segments, where you'd get, you know, from a car zooming past, tell us a joke, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So I find, thank God, to hear a little bit more affirming from
day-to-day
experience.
Yeah.
And is it true, when in the hey-hey days, did you and Maurie Fields used to live across the road from each other?
Yeah. Val, his wife, well, it's not directly across.
Right.
Down the road, and you'd occasionally, you know, drop in for a cup of tea or something. That's Murray.
And I thought it was his wife.
No, and yeah, we lived in the same street in Albert Park, but he'd bought in early before it became trendy.
And he let you know about that?
He did. And I've got to say, in recent times, with Underbelly, the juggernaut, which I have issues with, but I won't get into.
Right.
I'm glorifying greedy bogans.
Did he just go into it?
You started. That was an aside.
Yeah.
It was
oh, who was that? Did you hear that?
Maury talking about that. What am I talking about? Yeah, a lot of wharfies live in that area. You wouldn't think so, would you? Albert Park, you'd think, a little bit.
Family's been there a long time, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose they have. And they told me a lot of that stuff. Rubbish, they say. He'd never do that. Brian Kane had never bloody inform on such and such. I'm getting first-hand information. But this is the area, and this is when Maury and Val bought in to Albert Park. You don't even know where Albert Park is, do you, Gretel?
Yes, I do.
Good.
Do know where it is.
You're going to say that Maury Fields was somehow involved in the...
No.
In
I think the Carl that's the Williams subtext.
Underbelly, the untold story.
This is why I'm not called in for the scenarios, you see. It's quite obvious.
Hey, no. Yes, since I'm here, sorry, John,
to barge in,
but since we've been bringing up all our old work, I have to say, Shane, the rumour is this is the year when Are You Being Served Down Under is going to come out in DVD.
Well, it was never actually called Are You Being Served Down Under, but I think it should have been, because I think it would have had...
What was Are You Being Served in Australia?
Just Are You Being Served.
Oh, really?
It was late 70s, John Inman, who was the late John Inman, who was the star playing Mr. Humphreys. I'm free.
And he was the only one from the original?
He was the only one, and the storyline went that he came out on sabbatical to work at the sister department store. I think it was Grace Brothers in the UK.
Yes.
And here it was Bone Brothers. I never really thought that before. Yeah. It was Bone Brothers. And they assembled a cast around.
And you were...
They were identical kind of cast. June Bronhill played Mrs...
It's the equivalent of Molly Sugden, the late Molly Sugden.
Yeah, very much. This is developing a theme here. Yeah.
And who did you play?
I played the offsider,
You were the equivalent of Mr. Lucas.
Yeah, I was...
You were the straight guy.
Mr. Randall.
You were heterosexual.
Heterosexual, and I don't know whether it was considered or it just happened, put on the white socks, which Kramer...
Oh, right.
Obviously stole. But it gives you a little bit of a larrikin kind of thing, and when you're strutting over to haberdashery... You kind of get a bit of a swagger without even doing it.
So it was all about your ankles.
It was all about the ankle. And a bit of I'll tell you what else was very popular back then was the kind of thing, which isn't great radio, but it's when you kind of shake your head and look up, roll your eyes, I suppose you would, but do it very quickly. That was the only thing I really took from the English production.
And first aid never ran onto the set when you did that? Because it does.
I don't think it's a double take.
It looked like a little fit.
First aid back then, we used to get paid cash. There was no first aid. Lyle McCabe was the producer. He'd go, there you go, get yourself something. That was it.
Got some Are You Being Served bucks. The drinks are on me. What about John Inman, though? Did he give you... Surely you must have been, advising everyone on the right way. Did you pick up any tips?
Well, look, there was a few clues. Like, well, he was very generous, I've got to say. Mm. And he was a masterly music hall performer. Because, it's an art that's probably lost, I'd say, by now. And great with props.
What does that mean? Is that something?
That means...
You mean on set or behind closed doors?
No, on set. And he and his personal assistant, who came out here from Britain...
Used to
entertain lavishly. I mean, he did demonstrate, as I've told you, I think, before, Tony, how he got the walk going. I don't know if you remember his little... kind of skippy little walk, and he used to place 20 cents between his knees and 20 cents clenched between the buttocks. So that gave him that little, I'm free! And if you listen carefully...
It's a complicated setup. If you listen, has anyone got any change? I can't go on. Has anyone got change for a 20?
If you listen carefully, I think there's one outtake and you hear when he stops, there's a bit of jingling. Yeah. And the change hits the studio floor. Yes, Mr. Slogan? Clink, clink.
How many people right now at home are trying it? I just know there's at least someone.
Give me some coins.
The Inman technique.
No, it was glorious and a great experience.
Well, so many things to draw back on. And the thing about, one of the reasons why I reckon your show works is the turnover of special guests that you have. You have a few who stay and kind of become a bit of a fixture, but no one stayed the whole way through. So you've got this constant turnover, and we get to see how they deal with the surprises you dish up for them. So what's the, are there guidelines? Is there a formula? Is there a routine on how often someone will last for?
No, I don't think so. I think it's reasonably intuitive. Tony Martin has been on the show a number of times.
Yes.
Someone like Hamish Blake tonight, if I can mention the show, tonight.
Is it the final tonight?
It's the finale, 90 minute.
And there's five guests in the finale.
Including...
Are you one of them?
No, I'm not.
Hamish
Didn't
Blake.
Make the cut.
Hamish Blake, who is someone that has probably done more than anyone else, apart from, dare I say it, Angus Sampson.
He's fantastic.
He's been a lot.
They're both great.
They're both great and they're very different. Angus is probably more actorial. He actually does inhabit a character. If you have a look tonight in the final scenario, the All-In Group Challenge, he takes it into deadpan territory, which is pretty hard to do in this show. Josh Lawson is another one who's done a lot, and yet we have two relative newcomers who have only been on the show once before, one being Felicity Ward and another young guy by the name of Toby Truslove. So I think
it's a lot to ask of someone who's kind of new to the game.
It is, to be on the final for a start.
Yeah.
But so that was a big vote of confidence in those two, and I think it's great the way Working Dog do, and they have right throughout this series. Would have been kind of easy, series four, you know, we've changed networks, let's just go with tried and true. Every episode there's been at least one new person, if not two.
Yeah. And that's a really important thing. I mean, people with suits who run radio stations, Tony Martin, or television networks, commercial television networks, by and large are risk-averse, and they want something that's going to save their own backsides when the advertising revenue is coming in. And yet here we've got Working Dog, you've got, you know, Rob and Tom and all the team, Mike Hirsch, all the rest of them, and they are constantly taking risks and showing that you can do it. You can do it with nous, you can do it with ideas that just are so strong. You don't have to panic. You don't have to worry.
Yep.
It's something worth backing. And I just wonder, what's the difference between their approach and their success rate, their strike rate, and the people who basically embody all the other suits and suites of offices and running the networks?
Well, I think it's called ratings.
But their attitude is completely the opposite of everybody else.
Well, that's what I mean. I really think they don't make programs. The imperative is not about ratings for them. It is about making quality, creative programs that they're going to be proud of, too. As Rob said to me during this series, it took me a while to kind of understand that. He said, this series is the one where we're going to look back at repeats and go, we nailed it. So what he's talking about, television changes so quickly now, and styles and fashions and trends. The series we did this time, because it was, the production values went way up, and they were sourcing kind of a different group of people, I think, to a certain extent.
I'll give you another example. That show that, I can't remember the name of it, the one that McAuliffe's hosting at the moment.
Talking about your generation.
Talking about My Generation. In theory, on paper, everyone would have looked at it, I reckon, and gone, nah, won't ever work. And it's rating its socks off.
Yep.
Well, I think it's because of Sean McAuliffe. I mean, it's a fairly sort of white bread idea that he's managed to preserve all of his qualities that he has. I mean,
well,
he's doing
actually,
some,
he shines in it, doesn't he?
But he's doing some pretty bizarre things.
Yep.
I'm actually on it next week, and I don't want to give anything away, but there's one bit where a piñata in the shape of the head of Henry Kissinger comes down, and Sean spent on the night something like 5 minutes attacking it with a baseball bat. Now, that's not something that would happen if, you know, I don't know, Larry Imdur or Hot Dogs or someone was hosting it. So they've really taken sorry, Gretel, I didn't mean to provide a flashback. But it's like, you know, they've let Sean
come
do
back,
what...
Gretel, come back.
Well, they've let him turn it into a McAuliffe program rather than take McAuliffe
they've
and...
They've backed him instead of trying to box him
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. They've let him do what he normally does.
Yeah. Do you think that message will get across? What do you reckon, Gretel, of creatures who run commercial television?
They're very different people, though, that we're talking about, because the working dog guys are they're creatives who are very different to the people who are making economic decisions within a network. One of the things that these boys have is a team, which is an enviable closeness, I think, and they also don't appear to be greedy. They, while you say they keep coming up with these ideas, if we actually look at them, they very solidly work on an idea, and it might be several years before something new pops up with them. So I think that they have the luxury of patience, and I mean it's enviable that they will sit until they get something right. And a lot of commercial television doesn't work like that because it's all about get the money there and hit it right on the head. So,
And what about people who say, "Oh, television's dead, free-to-air television, it's finished, it's had it, and all the rest of it"? What do you reckon?
Well, people have been saying that for a long time. Yeah. There are infinitely more mediums, but there are just as many people watching the headline shows now as have been previously, you know, up in the 2 millions, you know. So I can't see why there are just alternatives. And the only people that really are affected by that is the advertising agencies, isn't it?
Shane, what do you reckon?
Yeah, look, it's probably blurring now, I think, with cyberspace and television. Or the medium has changed drastically. And we experience that on a day-to-day basis where it goes from television to blog to talk back to whatever. And I think that's impacting on the decisions that television executives are making. I don't know whether it's good or bad. Look, there's some good telly on at the moment. Pack to the Rafters is a reasonable family drama. City Homicide, the program that I do, I think is
if it's on first run and people are watching it, then it becomes something that you watch on free to air. But I find most people watch things on DVD now. Like nobody watched The Sopranos when it was on
West Wing.
Yeah, but I know don't know anyone who hasn't seen those shows, and they just didn't see them when they were first on.
No, but remember they were put on at midnight.
Yes, that's true.
Or you didn't even know what time they
were
on.
That's exactly it. That it shows in the US and on at midnight here.
I think even with shows, dare I say it, like Thank God You're Here, I think people do occasionally do that. They go either record or I'll wait for the DVDs, which is a different way, isn't it? So it is impacting. I get the sense that television executives, I'm not talking about production houses, I'm talking about network executives, are scrambling to figure out how this is going to work.
Yeah.
And how they're going to make that same
There's a little bit scared of the dark too, I think. I remember one of the first, maybe the third book contract I ever signed, and it had written that you had to give the rights for known technology and technology yet to be invented.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So when your book is a suppository in the future at some point.
I've given them the rights.
They can do that.
And my bum dropped.
Shane, good luck, and thank you very much for coming in. Shane Bourne, Thank God You're Here, the series finale. Gretel Killeen's book. Her cathartic book is called
The Night My Bum Dropped.
It's where do you put the emphasis?
You just say, The Night My Bum Dropped, a gleefully exaggerated memoir that we can all relate to. That's a long title.
It is. And they didn't fit all of it in on the cover either. How strange. Tony Martin has been my co-host, and the website once more is...
The Scrivener's Fancy, lowbrow commentary in elegant surrounds.
Which is where you will find...
That doesn't fit on the cover either.
His latest offerings, along with those of the various people who also donate and volunteer their services to keep The Scrivener's Fancy going. Tony Martin, Gretel Killeen, Shane Bourne, thank you all for coming. This has been The Conversation Hour.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Subscribe now and you'll receive automatic updates with special guests, interesting interviews. It's a bit of fun. You'll be mad not to subscribe. abc.net.au/Melbourne.